in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome back to another edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast, a jam-packed edition with the Summit League tournament on the horizon. But before that, North Dakota State is ready to avenge their first loss in 39 tries. After last week's debacle in Carbondale, North Dakota State heads out to Springfield, Missouri. And to break it all down, we have our number one North Dakota State football analyst, Trevor Gebhardt. Trevor, how are we doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, and I appreciate the intro, Ross. It's pretty easy to be number one when you're the only one. So
yeah,
glad I can stay on top, though.
Although I tell you what, man, anybody that comes on this show thinks they're a football analyst. So you have a revolving guys that are always right beneath you. Anybody that, you know, comes on the show thinks they know the deal. But I don't know. I mean, you go back and look at what was said both on the coaches show and during the press conference, and it's everything you would ever want to hear. We can't be complacent. We can't roll the yellow helmets out there and just expect to win the game. We are not as good as we thought we were. And, you know, we need to recommit. Like, everything that you would want to hear, all the coach speak, all the players speak, it was all on point. But none of that matters unless something better happens between the white lines on Saturday.
Right. So from my take, and I was watching, playing catch up on some of the press conferences and whatnot throughout the week, the words were right. The body language was right. The eyes were right. And that's all you can ask for as far as looking for a mindset throughout the week when we're not at practice and get to see their daily habits. So now it's what's going to happen between these 60 minutes. I don't know what's going to happen. You don't really have a formidable foe on paper, to be quite honest and to put it blunt. So these guys need to come out and be killers. They need to get confidence early. They need to punch people in the face. They need to run people over, and they need to be the aggressors, because last week, it's an analogy that we got told a lot when I played, but be the hammer, not the nail. Last week, they were the nail. So it's time to reverse the script and be the hammer. And that's what they know how to do best. That is Bison football. And that's what they're trained to do. So if they're doing those things, they're executing to what they were brought in there for. And if not, you're going to see some struggles. So I think they just need to come out and set the tone early and get that confidence back that was completely void last week against Southern Illinois.
Yeah, I think, too, you see a team, as Ants mentioned, like, there were guys on his squad that would have been ready to go on Tuesday. I think there's a chance you're going to see a team that's chomping at the bit, and I would anticipate a fast start from NDSU. I think as soon as that thing was over, they were ready to play another football game the next day, because there was just kind of a rage built up inside. I mean, that's, you know, with no FBS football, obviously that led SportsCenter. It was at the top of the ESPN.com. Like, people know that they got beat up, and even an even larger audience knows that they got beat up than normal. This is something that these kids and this staff have to wear. You got to think they're going to be ready to go.
Well, you'd like to think. I'm very optimistic, and it's all but confirmed because I haven't talked to the guy, but I would have to imagine 7 out of the first 10 are 40 power. And that's just a tone setter. That's just to say we are going to go back to what we do best. And like Ent said early in the week, we need to shorten the playbook and we need to play fast. Well, That tells you one thing, 40 and 41. So I think you're going to see a heavy dose of pounding the rock and cover two. And I just want to make sure that guys are wrapping up and getting hats on the football. When you pause the tape at the end of a series when Missouri State has the football, you want to see 9 to 10 hats near the ball. I don't care if you didn't touch the guy. I want to see 9 to 10 hats at the ball, at the point of attack. So those two things are what I'm going to look for early, purely body language and demeanor. And based off what we've seen in our, you know, our kind of our opinion, based off the words and their actions that's on the surface right now, it looks like that might be the case.
Yeah, no question. I mean, they're, like I said, saying all the right things. As you mentioned, the body language is right. The word that kept getting thrown around was unacceptable. It was unacceptable what happened. And I think that's from a fan base perspective, but also from a program perspective. There isn't anyone at North Dakota State that's happy with how that's happy with how that all went down. Trev, can you just kind of walk us through like yesterday and today and maybe even tomorrow morning coming off of a loss? Not that you suffered a ton of those during your career, but I mean, what is that like? You wear the green and gold. You don't take a lot of L's. What are Thursday, Friday, and Saturday morning like as you are? Did you lose consecutive games in your entire career?
Not once.
That's why I didn't think so. Yeah, so what? No. Talk to me about the mentality. Talk to me about the routine. Talk to me about the conversations that you're having with your teammates Thursday, Friday, Saturday morning when people are listening to this likely. Give me the vibe. I mean, what was that like? Because Matt said Southern Illinois is not going to beat us twice. Well, that never happened to you guys. You never let it happen.
Honestly, as boring as this sounds, it's the exact same. And we're creatures of habit, especially athletes, and you don't want to break that mold of what got you to the point that you are. Now, that's not to say this team's arrived. They haven't. Sure. They still have a lot of work to do. We know that. But guys that have, quote unquote, been there, done that, don't completely just deviate from what you know how to do best. Because you clearly had a bad week. Everybody knows that. And you've kind of swallowed your pride in that fact. Well, you're on the road again. You're going through a unique situation where you're coming off a loss and then on the road again right after that. So just do the exact same thing. So Thursday, everything's kind of getting brushed up. The work's already really put in for the week. You're just making sure you're on your P's and Q's. You're not going to have any alignment issues. You know the personnel situation coming in and out of special teams. And you're just making sure you're going to go in and play clean, focused football. So that's what Thursday is like. Friday, same thing. It's just more of the same, but it's more mental than physical. So Thursday, you have a shortened practice. There's no hitting. Friday, it's all mental prep, and you get ready to travel. You're not talking a lot on the trip. If you have some schoolwork, maybe you're doing that, and you're just making sure that you're staying on track mentally with what your goals are for the travel. So coaches like to use the word business trip to shorten it. So that's Friday. Yeah. You land in, you know, the place that you're going to be at. So in this case, Springfield, you have your team meetings, your position meetings, and your captain's meeting like normal, like you would in Fargo. So you really don't deviate as far as your prep goes, but it's a renewed sense of focus, especially coming off a loss. So you just heighten that, make sure that you're paying attention to detail and going back to the basics, because what you did the previous week clearly was not the answer. So, okay, how can you go back to the winning ways that you know how to do? Simplify it and go fast and hard, and things tend to take care of themselves when you do that.
And that was kind of my big question for you too, is I made a point to ask Coach on Monday, you know, so much in this program, to its credit, is exactly what you just told me. And I've heard that from you, and I've heard it from Brock, and I've heard it from Easton, and I've heard it from any number of guys that I've spoken to. Go 1-0 that day. Accomplish that day. And this program has become such a machine and such a regimented thing that I thought it was, at least for my purposes, interesting to ask Matt what was different about this week. And he said, like, our meeting was very uncomfortable with the coaches, and this is different. And so that's why there's an interesting dichotomy to me, is in a program where every day kind of seems to be the same, and you're just trying to go 1-0 that day, and you're trying to accomplish that day's goals and move forward. I want to know, does nothing change? Do you just keep on rolling down the train? And it sounded to me from this group that, oh, hell yeah, there were changes.
In terms of what they were focused on and how they were approaching their day-to-day?
I mean, he didn't really get into specifics. He just said that the meeting room, or the meeting with the coaches, he hadn't had a chance to see the players yet because it was a Monday press conference, not a Tuesday press conference. And but the meeting with the coaches on Sunday was uncomfortable. They had uncomfortable conversations, and he said, like, I hope this is different. So that's why, like I'm saying, that there is this dichotomy between the regiment of North Dakota State football and the sameness, if you will, of North Dakota State football with the need in the coaching staff's eyes to do something different, to change maybe the way that they're approaching offense, to go back. And that's really the next thing I want to talk about, too, in kind of a segue, is I agree with you 1,000%, and I've been saying it myself. To me, besides the physicality, and we went over that forever on Tuesday or Monday, whenever you and I got together. Besides that, the number one thing from the film that I noticed was unnecessary complexity, both on offense and on defense. I thought that the best part of the Youngstown State win, besides the physicality, was the small number of calls. And they did that because they didn't know what Youngstown State would run. So they just said, you know what? We're going to run what North Dakota State runs, and we're going to run it well. And I thought they got away from that a little bit against SIU. This is a young group. Play hard, play fast, play kind of your base calls. I think that they're good enough at that to get it done and maybe reestablish some confidence.
So to kind of piggyback off what you were talking about with the coach's conversation and trying to bridge it, this ties into that about perfectly. So the makeup of every team is going to be slightly different. Different teams learn things at different stages. And these guys are learning adversity very quickly this season. They haven't experienced it in so long. They may have got complacent last week. I don't know what the exact case was. They may have just been unfocused, whatever. But they don't understand that you are going to get everybody's best shot every single week. And that's human nature, to kind of get away from that when you are so successful for so long. You're getting everybody's best every week. And coming off such a humbling and humiliating loss, these guys are quickly learning now. And like the coaching staff is talking about with their uncomfortable conversations, maybe we do need to change a couple things throughout the week. Maybe we do need to push these guys a little bit more because they might not be able to do it themselves. So push them hard, coach them hard, work them hard, but you give them the confidence by keeping things simple. Is it because they're a little bit younger group? Maybe. So I kind of understand what you're saying, but what I'm trying to get at is that every season, every team, every group is going to learn things at different stages. Sometimes you might have a senior, junior, and senior laden group that they've seen everything. You don't really need to teach them much. So that's why you stick to routine and don't really change anything. And you know that your best is going to be better than the other team's best if you play your best. So that's where the undefeated seasons come in and everything's hunky-dory all the time. So as far as this particular group, what they're learning right now and the learning curve they're going through is a sense of urgency because every team is gunning for you and you have a massive target on your back. Nobody likes you. That's just a fact. So when you go through something that kind of puts you down, like we've said over and over here, keep things so simple to where you can take that and build on it and not make things so complicated and make things harder for these young cats to think about when they're on the field. Because that's not why you brought them in. You didn't bring them in to think. You brought them in to play.
Yeah, and that's the big deal here is that for a number of reasons, this is a truncated time to learn those lessons. They can maybe afford one more lesson and still be a part of the playoff field because it's a 9-game season because they had one in the fall and because it's a 16-team playoff, not a 24-team playoff. There is not a giant there is no more room for lessons outside of maybe one more lesson.
Right. And so the one thing, oh, sorry to cut you off there.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
The one thing we didn't talk about in the game recap pod earlier this week was the fact that they had an early loss could be a good thing because let's say hypothetically, and I know the coaches aren't talking about this and they're probably going to hate me for even bringing it up, but let's say you went out.
Yep.
Yeah. Sorry, Grant. let's say you went out. You're likely to get a 1 or 2 seed because you're going to be the Valley champion or at least tied for it. So at that point, you probably are a tiebreaker with somebody. And the Valley champion is typically going to get a 1 or 2 seed, barring a James Madison or Weber State going defeated. So learning this early now, it's like the playoff for the FBS. Like losing early almost helps you out because you have things to build upon and people go, oh, that happened so long ago. So getting humbled this early could be the best thing that happens to this team.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of dichotomies, here's an interesting one as well. You mentioned 41 power, 40 power. Go run it, you know, in your first 15. It's maybe you're hoping it's maybe in there 11 times.
I want it 12 or 13. I'll be honest. I want crack blocks too.
Okay. So with this though, Trev, I do want you to know, right now, Missouri State opponents are averaging 2.6 a carry. They are something up front. I was told today that Bobby Petrino brought in 3 JUCO defensive linemen and they are nasty up front. And the other side of that is they are giving up over 7 yards per pass. So just looking at what they do well defensively, 40 power and 41 power may not be the best idea. But right now, the strength of the Bison defense is, or the Bison offense is not the passing game. And I mean, last week it didn't look like they had a strength, but obviously the week prior was the ability to get Kobe and Jalen Bussey going. So does that change your opinion at all? The fact that these guys are only giving up about 2.5 yards per carry and almost exactly 90 yards per game.
In a way. So I think what you do is you get those guys running laterally to fatigue them a little bit. So get some pass power going, which is you basically fake run one way and you have the quarterback roll out the same way that you fake that handoff. That's going to get those defensive linemen running side to side, tire them out, maybe get some subs to get guys that are, you know, your 15 to 20 snap type players. So they're not necessarily getting the bulk of the snaps. They're not the heavy hitters that are going to be able to stop the run and keep you under 3 yards of carry. You need to get those guys out or you need to get them tired. And the way you do that is by getting them run laterally through play action or screen game. So that could be one avenue to do it. I still think you don't run away from that, even though that is, quote unquote, the biggest competition or their strength of their defense. I don't think you run away from it. I think you need to set the tone and go, we realize this is your strength. We are still going to be better than you because that is a tone setter. When you do that, and if you beat them early, now you put that doubt creeping right back into their mind going, okay, Danny Green, they are who we thought they were. So I think you still set the tone with 40 power, maybe not 12 or 13 out of 15, like I would hope, but I still think you go 7 out of 10 and maybe 3 or 4 or more lateral movement, maybe some jet sweeps. You need to do something to kind of keep them on their heels and make them rethink, okay, we're not going to be able to attack them in the same way that we thought on film based off last week's game alone. So anytime a team does that, that's very dangerous. You never want a game plan just based off one game. So it'll be interesting to see what different looks Missouri State gives up front to try to confuse NDSU's offensive line. But I think at the end of the day, you set the tone by going right down their throat and you try to get those guys fatigued and sprinkle in some passes. I mean, if that's their weakness, obviously you need to fill the void. But
yeah,
NDSU has never shot away from the competition. It's not like
Babich, Gindorf, and Watson are bums.
Yeah. So, I mean, they haven't produced to the extent that I thought they would. And we talked about this in the game recap. They do need to get an early completion, all three of them, with Zeb. They just need to get an early, easy completion. It doesn't need to be anything extraordinarily where you get a 60-yard bomb or even something off a wheel route. It doesn't even have to be that fancy. Just get a stick route, a hank route, a hitch, all three of them, boom, boom, boom. Maybe even a NASCAR package where each one of them is getting a pass back to back. I don't care what it is. The confidence between them and Zeb needs to be early. I don't know. It doesn't exactly have to be in the first 15. It would be nice. But I think as long as those four get on the same page and you establish a ground game early, I think you're going to see a very similar result that we're used to seeing, where it's 35 to 40 minutes of ball control, a turnover or two, and getting off the field and staying on the field on third downs. Speaking of, which we didn't talk about earlier in the week either, we talked about third down. They got to get ahead of the chains. And that's where I think that's going to be important in the power and the screen game. So find a way to get your playmakers the ball, like I said, with a stick route or hitches or, you know, a quick screen game, whatever it is. I don't care. But you've got to get those 3 to 4 yards on first down. Because if you're playing behind the chains on that first and second down, third down's a heck of a lot harder on 3rd and 7 than it is on 3rd and 2. So start early.
And not even to be mean to Zeb, but like 3rd and 7, there were times too, read 1 is an open, read 2 is an open, whatever. 5 just tucks it and goes for 12. And that third option is not there right now. I mean, I'm sure there are some man calls where, yeah, Zeb could be just left on his own to trot for 11 yards, but that was a huge part of their offense. If read 1 and read 2 were not there, 5 was going. And he was a better athlete than everybody else on the field. So he was going to get the 10, 12, the 7, the 8, the whatever was needed. And it was a big time deal for last year's offense. There's no question about it. Defensively, I think, though, this is a game where you are going to see the ability to get right. This is not a good offensive team. I mentioned they were giving up 2.8 a carry?
2.8, yeah.
Yeah, excuse me. No, they're giving up 2.6. They're running for 2.8. That's what Missouri State is doing on the ground right now. They are running for 2.8 a carry. They're averaging just 106 on the ground per game. I mean, that's a good quarter for the Bison. That's a healthy quarter for North Dakota State. And offensively right now, too, the lead man, Jaden Johnson, the quarterback, he's got a 1-6, not 6-1, 1-6 touchdown to interception ratio, and is only completing 53% of his passes. This is not a very gifted offensive team. And yeah, I mean, right now, with the way North Dakota State's offense is playing, this has the potential, I think, to be a grinder. And if the light goes on for the Bison offense, it won't be a grinder. But this could really be, I think, a get-right game for Code Green.
It should be. You hope it is. Their strength really is in their wideouts. They're very athletic. They're very fast, and they can make plays. Now, the issue.
Can they get the ball there?
Yeah. So if they can't get the football, you're pretty much neutralized. And that's why quarterbacks are the highest paid players in the NFL and receivers aren't. So, and you don't build a team around a wide receiver as much as I would love to, but get hats on the quarterback. You're going to be able to blitz early and often. So bring hats, wrap him up, and things will take care of themselves. They're not going to be able to rush for 5 yards of carry, theoretically. So I just think you take their sails out early by maybe they're getting an early turnover, whether it's a fumble or a pick. That'd be nice to see. And just getting hats on the quarterback. And that it's going to be a very, very simple formula for the get right, as you say.
Yeah, I would have to check on this, but I'm almost certain that in the calendar year, I know Jaden Price ended the UCA game with a pick in cover two, but I don't think that these guys have a turnover in the calendar year of 2021. Do you remember one?
I'm going back to the game notes right now, and I don't recall one off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean that's what's sticking in my mind right now too is and that's something that Matt pointed out. Like, he thinks they're getting in great position. I don't think he would necessarily say that after Southern Illinois, but he feels like they are in great position to make the play, and they're not doing it. I mean, he's like, I don't want to lead the world in pass breakups. I'd like to catch a pick. And
so sorry to cut you off. I'm looking at it right now. So there's two QB hurries, three pass breakups. There are no fumbles and no interceptions in this calendar year. The only turnovers that apply to this season are the Central Arkansas game.
Yeah. So that's if you're Bison Nation, you need that to change on Saturday. I mean, I think there's certainly a number of ways that Missouri State could not turn the ball over and still lose the game. But I think you got to feel like Code Green needs to make a play and needs to get their juices flowing a little bit. Get Kaser with his hands on one in the flat. Get Jasir going the other way with the football in his hands and get a little juice for this defensive group. All right. Trev, give us a score prediction before we turn the page to the Summit League tournament.
I am going 21-13 Bison.
Ooh. So you would, just so that folks at home know, this is an 18.5 point spread. So Trev is certainly going with the Missouri State Bears and the points. But for the Bison to win the game, I am in that arena as well. I've got 27-10 Bison right kind of there in the Vegas zone, though technically I would also be taking the Bears. I am not going to call another 35-point game for North Dakota State until I see it. I will not predict the offense into the 30s until I actually see them get into the 30s. I was going to say, I don't care if they schedule Mayville State. I would, but I don't care who is on the other end of the schedule. Until I see that offense click and move and Zeb throw with confidence and just everybody doing their 111th, like we have seen so much in the past, I'm not predicting the Bison to get into the 30s. So, 27-10 for me. Trev was in with a tighter margin than that. But we both think that the Bison get right and move to, well, technically 3-1 on the 2020 season. Thanks, buddy.
Ross, I appreciate you, man. Travels.
Folks, this episode of Bison Report Radio is brought to you by Rise Training and Fitness in Moorhead, Minnesota. Rise was founded by former North Dakota State fullback, H-back, tight end, downfield threat, Chase Morlock, the legend number 25, and his buddy and mine, Aaron Lean, a former Minnesota State Moorhead basketball standout. They started in Chase's garage, helping Chase's mom and her friends lose a little weight and feel a little healthier. And that has really expanded into a phenomenal facility over in Moorhead that does everything, man. They do adult fitness. They are training young athletes, both high school and college age. They're doing sports specific stuff. They're doing acceleration stuff, run higher or run faster, jump higher. They're doing just a great job over there. Check in with Chase. Check in with Aaron. They did great, great work with their Elevate app during COVID, getting videos out to their clients so that they could work out at home, whether it was doing push-ups, sit-ups, curling the milk jug, whatever. They were making sure you were taken care of during COVID. And now, with the restrictions being lifted in the state of Minnesota, they are able to work you out in person again. I just got a phenomenal sweat in today. We are on the road back, certainly, over at Rise Fitness. Check them out, Rise Fitness and Training in Moorhead, Minnesota. All right, now bringing on Mr. Nate Zastrow, two-time North Dakota State men's basketball captain. Buddy, it is tournament time.
Yeah, it's officially March, and it's not a more exciting time for basketball fans. You got conference tournaments starting up this week, got bids starting to get punched tomorrow, and the Summit League in Sioux Falls, with or without fans, is still going to be an exciting time. There's some really good teams and some really good matchups set up for this weekend.
Yeah, I don't know if your wife Darian has ever been more concerned for you than when they canceled the tournament last year.
Yeah, it was a rough time. You know, we had to watch a lot of Wheel of Fortune. We got into some Jeopardy, and it was a tough time for me. I'm not gonna lie. I was breaking down film from previous March Madnesses, posting them on Twitter, and kind of watching highlights. And yeah, I'm glad it's back. Got games usually starting at about 11 a.m. now with the conference tournaments, and they're going all day. So it's a fun time of the year for me.
Okay, so I want to pose a question that got posed to me during my availability on Bison 1660. Keith asked me if I thought that a Summit League championship this year would be Dave Richmond's best coaching job. I thought about it for a little bit, but yeah, I mean, I think you throw, you know, COVID into it, you lose 67% of your scoring with Tyson, Jared, Chris, and Vinny. And then your JUCO point guard that's supposed to come in and fix everything that's broken breaks his leg in March. You move your power forward to point guard, and you still go 11-5 and then win the league and go to the NCAA tournament. Now, there's a lot in that sentence. It requires plenty to happen. But if it does happen, I did say yes. I mean, I thought even more than the year that you guys all left and LA drug them to the championship or even the year that they won the title as a four seed. I think just overall, they dealt with a lot of off the court stuff this season as well. I think this would be his best coaching job.
Yeah, I think you're right in saying that. I mean, you lost a bunch of scoring, and I think it shows, and I know we've talked about it on other podcasts, just the culture that he's built with his program, and the guys come in with an attitude that they need to be ready to win and they need to be ready to contribute, and some a lot sooner than others. And this year it was younger guys that were kind of thrown into the wolves. You got Grant Nelson, Bowden, McKinney. Those guys have really contributed this year. Obviously, Grant Nelson's on all newcomer team, sixth man of the year in the Summit League. We knew there was – he had the potential to be really good. I think it's happening a little sooner than we expected. And, you know, it's Sam and Rocky were thrown into a little bit of a bigger role, and I think that they've excelled in it. And a little disappointing not to get the regular season conference title with it in their grasp. But I think overall, if they can go win three games in Sioux Falls, it's going to be one of his best coaching jobs. I mean, the four seed year, lucked out a little bit with South Dakota State losing. They did beat a really good Omaha team in the finals. But, yeah, this year I think would be his best coaching job, just the way they started. The expectations were high just because we're NDSU, but I don't think a lot of fans realized how much we lost in Vinny and Tyson last year.
And I think what's really allowed them to bounce back or allowed them to – kind of continue the Bison way is the leadership of Sam, Rocky, and Tyree. Because those guys have been through it, you know, Tyree did miss last year's Summit League tournament with a concussion, but he'd been through the battles the year prior. Rocky started at center for all of that run, and Sam, of course, had his true freshman and true sophomore year playing the four. Now he's playing the one. I think, you know, two, you do see a team with, you know, one first team All Summit League guy, one second team All Summit League guy, and no honorable mentions. I would have probably, with his efficiency and his ability to play defense, I think that Tyree should have been honorable mention. I would have personally, I would have voted him second team. I don't get a vote, but I would have voted him second team. Not that Dave's doing this with pitch and bailing wire or doing a lot with nothing, but this does not, this squad is not like, you know, where you've got Marshall and Trayvon both on the first team All Summit, or you've got Vinny and Tyson both on first team All Summit, or you've got Ben and Brett both on first team All Summit. This is a team that's more of a team.
Yeah, and we've seen that all year. I mean, they've had, what, six or seven different leading scorers. It's kind of been a different guy every night. Rocky had his run there where he was really playing at a first-team All-Summit League level, and obviously he kind of showed that consistency throughout. Lately, Sam's really picked up his scoring. Tyree's just been consistent as ever. You get Jarius a few games here and there where he's catching fire. And Grant's turned into be a consistent 6-10 points a night. Sometimes he gets a little higher in double figures. But they're kind of getting the same consistent production from these guys every night. And I think that that's what's led them to win games they're supposed to and put themselves in a position to play for conference championships. And they had a chance for the regular season, and I think they're in a great spot with where they are in the bracket this week in Sioux Falls.
Yeah, here's a stat. You're a stat guy. I got a stat for you here, Nate. There are 360 Division I college basketball programs. So if you are in the top 36 of a category, it means you're one of the top 10% in the entire country at that stat. It blows me away that the Summit League has three of the top 36 teams in three-point percentage. And South Dakota State is number two in the entire country. South Dakota State shot 40.2% from downtown, which is absurd. Oral Roberts shot 39%. They're eighth in the country. So the Summit League has two of the best 8 3-point shooting teams in the entire league. Excuse me, I've even screwed up my own stat. It's four teams in the top 36. The Summit League has four teams in the top 10% of 3-point shooting in the entire country. At number two, again, South Dakota State. At number eight, Oral Roberts. South Dakota at 38.37% is the number 16 three-point shooting team in the country. And then bringing up the rear of, again, the top 10% of the 360 college basketball programs, UMKC, which you wouldn't think. And they actually have kind of a small amount of attempts for this kind of nonsense. But they are the 36th ranked team in the country at 37.34%. And I think we've spent most of this season complaining and bitching and moaning about NDSU's ability to go cold from three. And I thought, oh, they're probably a 20th percentile three-point shooting team or a 30th percentile three-point shooting team. They're not that great. They're actually above average. Not by much, but they're 164th in the country. Again, there are 360 Division I teams. They're 33.94%, making them a 34% shooting three-point team. That's average, slightly above average. And I feel like I have thought all week, or all season, excuse me, that NDSU is going to die because their season's going to end because they're living and dying by the three, and the other schools are so much better than they are. But they're just average. They're an okay shooting team. It's not just a bunch of athletes that can't shoot. I mean, they're, like I said, they're 164th in the country. Would you like to be in the top 100 or the top 40 like the other schools in the Summit? Sure. But I think that's a big, big, big key in these games is, can they guard the three and can they make their own? But if another team goes 13 of 20 from three, it's going to be a rough day.
Yeah, and what's crazy about that stat is the Summit League was kind of forced, especially the top teams. I mean, South Dakota State, South Dakota, North Dakota State, Oral Roberts, they all played a lot of high majors early on in the season. So yeah, I know they played 16 conference games, but those teams were playing high major teams, and their three-point percentages are still that high. It kind of shows you how underrated the league actually is as far as having really good players. But yeah, UMKC one kind of surprises me. They typically play lower possession games, and they have lost a lot of close games. I mean, that sixth seed could easily be up to the 3-4-5 range. And yeah, that's why I think it's a tough matchup, because they're kind of similar to NDSU in that they really defend. And like you talked about on previous podcasts, is if they let them be physical this weekend, which in tournament ball, it tends to get a little more physical, hopefully NDSU can play through that and hit some shots, because I think they kind of wish they would have got that second one in Kansas City. But both of those games were just low-scoring grinders, and I think we can expect the same thing on Sunday.
Well, and as I mentioned on 1660 as well, this basketball team, and yes, look, they 100% had the Sam fadeaway against Omaha, or they maybe go and lose that game, but in overtime. But they're a couple bounces away from being 14-2 in the league and winning the league. Yes, 100%. Oral Roberts won that Saturday game in Fargo, no question about it. And South Dakota kicked their butts the Saturday in Vermilion. But other than that, the Friday night game that they lost to South Dakota State, they had an 83%+ chance to win that game with 2 minutes left, up five, and just didn't get it done. And then they missed a decent look at a three in Kansas City, and UND, you know, beat them in overtime because Sam missed free throws. They were that close to being 14-2. And that's kind of the inconsistency of this group. By the way, a fun little wrinkle to that other stat, the number three overall team shooting exactly 40% from three is IPFW.
And they shoot a lot of threes. I actually watched their game against Cleveland State the other night. They had them on the ropes as the 10 seed in the Horizon League, about to upset the 2 seed like they did last year. And Cleveland State guy banked a three, and they ended up losing in like three overtimes. But
oh no,
yeah, I mean IPFW was always a good 3-point shooting team and really a high scoring team. Didn't always defend the greatest, and I think that's kind of what keeps them from winning consistently. But yeah, I mean, we can count them as another Summit League team. Horizon League, I guess, is supposedly a little bit better. I don't think it really is. Maybe top to bottom they are. But yeah, I mean, they got to defend the three this weekend. And I think that they're not really going to change much that they do defensively. They're going to contest. And if they hit contested jumpers against them, and they do it consistently for 40 minutes, well, then they're probably going to win the game.
Yeah, and the straw that serves the drink for UMKC is Brandon McKissick. He was one of the top defensive players in the Summit League. In fact, he might have won Defensive Player of the Year in the Summit League. I think he leads the conference in steals, averages 34 minutes a game when he has been available. Was not available for that game, for either game in Kansas City. But I think the guy that's going to make a huge difference is Arkell Lamar. He is transfer from UMKC that they got midseason, was a massive problem for North Dakota State in Kansas City, and then twinged his back. And for me, watching what South Dakota State was able to do to those guys, and everybody knows about Shireman and Winjet and Arians and their ability to fill it up, but Apple and Wilson and Dentlinger absolutely ate these guys alive. And without Lamar, while they are a ball pressure team, and they got, look, South Dakota State, welcome to Brookings, baby. They got every call. They did. They got every whistle. And I don't know as though that will go the same for North Dakota State in the Pentagon, but South Dakota State made like 75% of their 2-point attempts. And I'm not exaggerating. I think that is roughly the number in that 2-game series. Without Arkell Lamar, who honestly is only about 6'7", they're just tiny. They're too little. And look, I'll be the first to say it. I think Grant Wilson has a tremendous future. Right now, he's not a great post player. Rocky Cruiser is a first-team All-Summit League. He's not a great post player. His ability to score is based on the fact that he's a great three-point shooter and has the ability to put the ball on the deck and blow by most fives. His actual you know, post move set. This is not Marshall Bjorklund. Rocky just isn't that guy. So I think a lot of what this game could come down to is North Dakota State's ability to get Grant Nelson and Rocky Cruiser going inside if UMKC is unable to use Lamar, because that is where South Dakota State absolutely beat the Ruse to death, is inside the two, even getting, you know, Tyree Edie post touches. That's a big deal as well. Plus, you know, that can open up a little bit of space for their shooters. They packed it in against NDSU, and without Jarius, the Bison were just unable to shoot over the top of that zone, which is a trouble that we also saw in USD until game two, when Sam Griesel just decided he was going to make everything he looked at.
Yeah. And we say it's going to be a grinded out game. I fully expect them to pack it in again, and it's going to be a low possession game. NDSU is going to have to hit shots. And I think you're right. They need to find a matchup or two that they like and try to run their offense to find that matchup in the post and play a little bit of inside out. Cause if they score a little bit in the paint, it's going to be packed in even more than it already is. And they're going to get even better looks. I think NDSU's done a really good job offensively getting good looks from the three. They don't really take too many contested ones. Obviously, there's going to be some late shot clock, but they just got to knock them down. And we seem to talk about it every game, like make an open shot. And yep, the good thing is they're getting them. So hopefully they can continue to do that. I'm looking at some Summit League stats here. I mean, UMKC scored 64 points a game in conference play and gave up 62. So they were tops in the league defensively at 62 and only last in the league, only scoring 64. So that just shows you that like they're going to slow the game down. They don't want to play fast. They obviously don't think that they can score very well. But NDSU, the way they have some cold spells in games, UMKC gets up 8 to 10. NDSU is going to be pressing a little bit. It's tournament time. You lose, you're done. And anything can happen then. So it'll be important for NDSU to get off to a quick start, make sure that they have the lead, put some pressure on UMKC to hit shots, because they don't necessarily want to play fast. So if NDSU can still make it a half-court game, make them hit contested shots. I know their percentages are high from three or top, 36 you said. But yeah, it'll be important to have that 6-8 point lead. I don't think it's going to be any type of blowout. Need to be ready to defend, but need to be ready to box out and rebound, holding the one shot and done, and get stops. That's what it comes down to in March.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, the way that this is all playing out, the reality of the situation is this. Maybe I've mentioned this on the show before, but that was the most difficult injury to watch I've ever been a part of, with AJ Plitzewhite. We know now that I think only his PCL made it through. I think he lost the LCL, MCL, and ACL. Significant recovery. I would not expect to see AJ Plitzewhite in a meaningful role next year, just because of how late and how severe this injury was. So without that, Stanley's going to have to put 45 on NDSU for the Yotes to get past them, I think. And that really means that getting through this UMKC game more than likely gets you to Tuesday. And on Tuesday, anything can happen, especially if South Dakota State keeps losing early Summit tournament games. And so that, I think, really puts an interesting amount of pressure on this Sunday night game. And Dave would not look ahead, and I don't think the players will look ahead, but as an analyst and as Bison fans, I think you can kind of look ahead and see Sunday as the key to Tuesday.
Yeah, I think Sunday's going to be the biggest game because, I mean, once you get one, you kind of get the train rolling and you carry that momentum to the next night. You get a full 24 hours. You play the late game. You get done at probably 11:30. You get some sleep. You get a shoot around, and you don't play till later that night. And I remember last time NDSU was the 3 seed was my senior year. And, of course, we ended up losing in the finals to South Dakota State. Hopefully it's a little different result this time. But yeah, we played UMKC in that 3-6 matchup, and you kind of just grind out that first one. It was a grinded out game. We swept them in the regular season, and you just found a way to win. I think we won by 8-10, hit free throws at the end, and then you kind of just get it rolling. And with that injury, it definitely sets the stage for NDSU if they can get one game and get rolling and get to that semifinal, to just play solid and play like they did last Sunday. They obviously have some confidence against a USD team, and there's no guarantee USD is going to beat Western. I mean, I'm checking out spreads and that thing's only 8. I mean, that they know about that injury obviously already, and that's pretty low for a 2-7 matchup when I believe USD pounded them twice in the regular season. So, yeah, anything can happen. And we've seen 1-8 upsets. We've seen 2-7 upsets the last few years. So, I mean, anything can happen. And I think the Dakotas are going to get a bit of an advantage actually playing in the Pentagon this year. So I think that that's going to help those teams going into this weekend. So it'll be interesting to see how they play after their 3 games that they played there in November.
Yeah, and I'll close with this, and we'll close up shop. We're not going to do predictions because we're probably going to cover the Summit League tournament on a daily basis. You know, this Bison team has been so inconsistent, but you can see the talent. I mean, honestly, they should have beaten Kansas, who, by the way, just beat Baylor. They should have won that game, and they didn't. And that, unfortunately, has kind of been Coach Richmond's deal against high majors. They got a lot of woulda, coulda, shouldas against high majors. But they should have beat Kansas, and they probably should have beat TCU. And the version of them that led South Dakota State by 22, and the version of them that absolutely ran Denver out of the gym on that Saturday, that is the best team in this conference. That version of them. Even when South Dakota State is hitting threes and doing all their stuff, that team is so complete because of their ability to defend. And finding that group is probably something that will happen next year and the year after that when you know, kind of Andrew Morgan takes Rocky's place if everybody takes their COVID year and everybody, you know, returns. But this year's group is inconsistent. And the issue with that is this is a single elimination format. If you lose, you go home. And for me, it's the ability to win the night you don't have it. And the night they didn't have it last year was the 1-8 game against Denver. They almost lost. They could have lost that game. I'm worried that if this group doesn't have it, they will lose. But if they've got it, I promise you the upside of this team is cutting down those nets.
Yeah, and we've seen some spurts and close to full games where they have looked really well. I mean, South Dakota State, I think the second night they played well for probably 30 minutes, and we saw a glimpse of what they really can be. And I think when they're at their best, they are the best team in the league, and especially with no Friedel for South Dakota State. I think when every team's at their best, I think NDSU is the most complete all-around team in the league. 3 games in 3 days, we're probably beating a dead horse here. They can use their depth too in these games. The 1 and 2 seeds obviously have a bit of an advantage getting a day's rest in between if they win on opening night. So I think Richmond, I don't see it in Summit League play. He's probably going to stick to 6-7 deep, but I think there's going to be some moments where you're going to need a guy in that 8-9 range who's going to come in and give you some type of production when things aren't going well on one of those nights. So hopefully whole team should be ready, and I think that their defense is going to keep them in every game, even if they are cold one night. But like you said, hopefully they can overcome a bad offensive game and just find a way, because there's going to be 1, 2, maybe even all 3 games that are going to be like that.
All right, folks, have a phenomenal weekend. Then go Bison.